Chapter 78. I should keep it quiet, I think, Mrs. Gamp. I wouldn't mention it to Mr. Chuzzlewit on his return, for instance, unless it were necessary, or he asked you point blank. Apostrophe, the very words was on my lips, sir, apostrophe, Mrs. Gamp rejoined. Supposing that the gent should die, I hope I might take the liberty of saying as I know it's someone in the undertaking line, and yet give no offense to you, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, certainly, Mrs. Gamp, apostrophe, said Mould, with much condescension. You may casually remark, in such a case, that we do the thing pleasantly, and in a great variety of styles, and are generally considered to make it as agreeable as possible to the feelings of the survivors. But don't obtrude it, don't obtrude it. Easy, easy. My dear, you may as well give Mrs. Gamp a card or two, if you please. Apostrophe, Mrs. Gamp received them, and scenting no more rum in the wind, for the bottle was locked up again, rose to take her departure. Wishing every happiness to this happy family, apostrophe, said Mrs. Gamp with all my heart. Good afternoon, Mrs. Mould. If I was Mr. Wood, I should be jealous of you, ma'am. And I'm sure, if I was you, I should be jealous of Mr. Mould. Apostrophe, tut, tut. Bah, bah. Go along, Mrs. Gamp. Apostrophe, cried the delighted undertaker. As to the young ladies, apostrophe, said Mrs. Gamp, dropping a curtsy, bless their sweet looks, how they can ever reconcise it with their duties, to be so grown up with such young parents, and for such as me to give a guess at. Apostrophe, nonsense, nonsense. Be off, Mrs. Gamp. Apostrophe, cried Mould. But in the height of his gratification he actually pinched Mrs. Mould as he said it. I'll tell you what, my dear, apostrophe, he observed, when Mrs. Gamp had at last withdrawn, and shut the door, that's a very shrewd woman. That's a woman whose intellect is immensely superior to her station in life. That's a woman who observes and reflects in an uncommon manner. She's the sort of woman now, apostrophe, said Mould, drawing his silk handkerchief over his head again, and composing himself for a nap one would almost feel disposed to bury for nothing, and do it neatly too. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mrs. Mould and her daughters fully concurred in these remarks, the subject of which had by this time reached the street, where she experienced so much inconvenience from the air, that she was obliged to stand under an archway for a short time, to recover herself. Even after this precaution, she walked so unsteadily, as to attract the compassionate regards of divers kind-hearted boys, who took the liveliest interest in her disorder, and in their simple language bade her be of good cheer, for she was only a little screwed. Apostrophe, whatever she was, or whatever name the vocabulary of medical science would have bestowed upon her malady, Mrs. Gamp was perfectly acquainted with the way home again, and arriving at the house of Anthony Chuzzlewit and son, lay down to rest, remaining there until 7 o'clock in the evening, and then persuading poor old Chuffy to betake himself to bed, she sallied forth upon her new engagement. First, she went to her private lodgings in Kingsgate Street, for a bundle of robes and wrappings comfortable in the night season, and then repaired to the Bull in Holborn, which she reached as the clocks were striking 8. As she turned into the yard, she stopped, for the landlord, landlady, and head chambermaid were all on the threshold together talking earnestly with a young gentleman who seemed to have just come, or to be just going away. The first words that struck upon Mrs. Gamp's ear obviously bore reference to the patient, and it being expedient that all good attendants should know as much as possible about the case on which their skill is brought to bear, Mrs. Gamp listened as a matter of duty. No better, then? Apostrophe, apostrophe, observed the gentleman. Worse. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the landlord. Much worse, apostrophe, added the landlady. Oh! A deal better, apostrophe, cried the chambermaid from the background, opening her eyes very wide, and shaking her head. Poor fellow! apostrophe apostrophe said the gentleman, I am sorry to hear it. The worst of it is, that I have no idea what friends or relations he has, or where they live, except that it certainly is not in London. Apostrophe, the landlord looked at the landlady. The landlady looked at the landlord. And the chambermaid remarked, hysterically, that of all the many vague directions she had ever seen or heard of,
and they wasn't feeling an hotel, that was the vaguest.
Apostrophe, the fact is, you see, apostrophe pursued the gentleman, as I told you yesterday, when you sent to me, I really know very little about him. We were schoolfellows together, but since that time I have only met him twice. On both occasions I was in London for a boy's holiday,
having come up for a week or so from Wiltshire,
and lost sight of him again directly. The letter bearing my name and address which you found upon his table, and which led to your applying to me, is in answer, you will observe, to one he wrote from this house the very day he was taken ill, making an appointment with him at his own request. Here is his letter, if you wish to see it. Apostrophe, the landlord read it. The landlady looked over him. The chambermaid, in the background, made out as much of it as she could, and invented the rest, believing it all from that time forth as a positive piece of evidence. He has very little luggage, you say? Apostrophe, apostrophe, observed the gentleman, who was no other than our old friend, John Westlock. Nothing but a portmanteau, apostrophe said the landlord, and very little in it. Apostrophe, a few pounds in his purse, though? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes. It's sealed up, and in the cash box. I made a memorandum of the amount, which you're welcome to see. Apostrophe, well. Apostrophe, apostrophe said John, as the medical gentleman says the fever must take its course, and nothing can be done just now beyond giving him his drinks regularly, and having him carefully attended to, nothing more can be said, that I know of, until he is in a condition, to give us some information. Can you suggest anything else? Apostrophe, and no, apostrophe replied the landlord, except apostrophe, except, who's to pay, I suppose? Apostrophe, apostrophe said John. Why, apostrophe hesitated the landlord, it would be as well. Apostrophe, quite as well, apostrophe said the landlady. Not forgetting to remember the servants, apostrophe said the chambermaid in a bland whisper. It is but reasonable, I fully admit, apostrophe said John Westlock. At all events, you have the stock in hand to go upon for the present, and I will readily undertake to pay the doctor and the nurses. Apostrophe, ah! Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mrs. Gamp. A real gentleman. Apostrophe, she groaned her admiration so audibly that they all turned round. Mrs. Gamp felt the necessity of advancing, bundle in hand, and introducing herself. The night nurse, apostrophe she observed, from Kingsgate Street, well beckoning to Mrs. Brick the day nurse, and the best of creeders. How is the poor dear gentleman tonight? If he an't no better yet, still that is what must be expected and prepared for. It an't the first time by a many score, ma'am, apostrophe dropping a curtsy to the landlady, that Mrs. Brick and me has nussed together, turn and turn about, one off, one on. We knows each other's ways, and often gives relief when others fail. Our charges is but low, sir. Mrs. Gamp addressed herself to John on this head, considering the nature of our painful duty. If they was made according to our wishes, they would be easy paid. Apostrophe, regarding herself as having now delivered her inauguration address, Mrs. Gamp curtsied all round, and signified her wish to be conducted to the scene of her official duties. The chambermaid led her, through a variety of intricate passages, to the top of the house, and pointing at length to a solitary door at the end of a gallery, informed her that yonder was the chamber where the patient lay. That done, she hurried off with all the speed she could make. Mrs. Gamp traversed the gallery in a great heat from having carried her large bundle up so many stairs, and tapped at the door, which was immediately opened by Mrs. Brigg, bonneted and shawled and all impatience to be gone.
Mrs. Brigg was of the gam build, but not so fat, and her voice was deeper and more like a man's. She had also a beard. I began to think you weren't a coming. ... Mrs. Brigg observed, in some displeasure. It shall be made good tomorrow night, ... said Mrs. Gamp honorable. I had to go and fetch my things. ... She had begun to make signs of inquiry in reference to the position of the patient, and his overhearing them, for there was a screen before the door, when Mrs. Brigg settled that point easily. ... She said aloud, he's quiet, but his wits is gone. It and no matter what you say. ... Anything to tell afore you goes, my dear? ... asked Mrs. Gamp, setting her bundle down inside the door, and looking affectionately at her partner. The pickled salmon, ... Mrs. Brigg replied, is quite delicious. I can partly recommend it. Don't have nothing to say to the cold meat, for it tastes of the stable. The drinks is all good. ... Mrs. Gamp expressed herself much gratified. The physic and them things is on the drawers and mantel shelf, ... said Mrs. Brigg, cursorily. He took his last slime draft at 7. The easy chair and soft enough. He'll want his pillar. ... Mrs. Gamp thanked her for these hints, and giving her a friendly good night, held the door open until she had disappeared at the other end of the gallery. Having thus performed the hospitable duty of seeing her safely off, she shut it, locked it on the inside, took up her bundle, walked round the screen, and entered on her occupation of the sick chamber. A little dull, but not so bad as might be, ... Mrs. Gamp remarked. I'm glad to see a pair of pitch, in case of fire, and lots of roofs and chimney pots to walk upon. ... It will be seen from these remarks that Mrs. Gamp was looking out of window. When she had exhausted the prospect, she tried the easy chair, which she indignantly declared was harder than a brick batch. ... Next she pursued her researches among the physic bottles, glasses, jugs, and teacups. And when she had entirely satisfied her curiosity on all these subjects of investigation, she untied her bonnet strings and strolled up to the bedside, to take a look at the patient. A young man, dark and not ill-looking, with long black hair, that seemed the blacker for the whiteness of the bedclothes. His eyes were partly open, and he never ceased to roll his head from side to side upon the pillow, keeping his body almost quiet. He did not utter words, but every now and then gave vent to an expression of impatience or fatigue, sometimes of surprise, and still his restless head, weary hour, went to and fro without a moment's intermission. Mrs. Gamp solaced herself with a pinch of snuff, and stood looking at him with her head inclined a little sideways, as a connoisseur might gaze upon a doubtful work of art. By degrees, a horrible remembrance of one branch of her calling took possession of the woman, and stooping down, she pinned his wandering arms against his sides, to see how he would look if laid out as a dead man. Her fingers itched to compose his limbs in that last marble attitude. ... said Mrs. Gamp, walking away from the bed, he'd make a lovely corpse. ... She now proceeded to unpack her bundle, lighted a candle with the aid of a firebox on the drawers, filled a small kettle, as a preliminary to refreshing herself with a cup of tea in the course of the night, laid what she called a little bit of fire, ... for the same philanthropic purpose, and also set forth a small tea board, that nothing might be wanting for her comfortable enjoyment. These preparations occupied so long, that when they were brought to a conclusion it was high time to think about supper, so she rang the bell and ordered it. I think, young woman, ... said Mrs. Gamp to the assistant chambermaid, in a tone expressive of weakness, that I could pick a little bit of pickled salmon, with a nice little sprig of fennel, and a sprinkling of white pepper. I takes new bread, my dear, with just a little pat of fresh butter, and a morsel of cheese.
In case there should be such a thing as a cowcumber in the house, will you be so kind as bring it, for I'm rather partial to 'em, and they does a world of good in a sick room. If they draws the Brighton old tipper here, I takes that ale at night, my love, it being considered wakeful by the doctors. And whatever you do, young woman, don't bring more than a shilling's worth of gin and water warm, when I rings the bell a second time, for that is always my allowance, and I never takes a drop beyond. Having preferred these moderate requests, Mrs. Gamp observed that she would stand at the door until the order was executed, to the end that the patient might not be disturbed by her opening it a second time, and therefore she would thank the young woman to look sharp. A tray was brought with everything upon it, even to the cucumber, and Mrs. Gamp accordingly sat down to eat and drink in high good humor. The extent to which she availed herself of the vinegar, and supped up that refreshing fluid with the blade of her knife, can scarcely be expressed in narrative. Sighed Mrs. Gamp, as she meditated over the warm shilling's worth, what a blessed thing it is living in a whale to be contented. What a blessed thing it is to make sick people happy in their beds, and never mind oneself, as long as one can do a service. I don't believe a finer cowcumber was ever growed. I'm sure I never see one. She moralized in the same vein until her glass was empty, and then administered the patient's medicine, by the simple process of clutching his windpipe to make him gasp, and immediately pouring it down his throat. I almost forgot the pillar, I declare. Said Mrs. Gamp, drawing it away. There. Now he's comfortable as he can be, I'm sure. I must try to make myself as much so as I can. With this view, she went about the construction of an extemporaneous bed in the easy chair, with the addition of the next easy one for her feet. Having formed the best couch that the circumstances admitted of, she took out of her bundle a yellow nightcap, of prodigious size, in shape resembling a cabbage, which article of dress she fixed, and tied on with the utmost care, previously divesting herself of a row of bald old curls, that could scarcely be called false, they were so very innocent of anything approaching to deception. From the same repository she brought forth a night jacket, in which she also attired herself. Finally, she produced a watchman's coat which she tied round her neck by the sleeves, so, Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.